Blog Talk Radio.
Set up.
Can you hear me any better at this point?
Yeah, no, now you're getting a little bit better. No, the reason I called you one.
Does that make it any better?
Well, are you screaming into your microphone now?
No, I wouldn't do that. That would be an asshole move.
The reason I call you one of the luckiest.
Everybody knows it's far beyond me to be an asshole. I would not do that.
Never. Never. What?
No.
You?
No. Uh-uh.
You?
Nope. Me? No, uh-uh. Wouldn't even fathom the thought of being. Well, okay, never mind. So it's just getting too deep, and I'm not wearing hip waders. Yeah, I would definitely be an asshole. I'm really bad at it.
The reason I call you one of the luckiest SOBs is, what, last week we were talking about how much of a piece of crap that broke into your truck and stole all your tools, and come to find out that they were pretty much damn near recovered. Not official yet.
Let's take that back.
Oh.
Yes. I did get a call from detective on the local PD. Hey, we've got some tools that we think are yours. Can you give me a description? Blah, blah, blah. I give him a description. He says, oh, fantastic. These definitely look like they're going to be yours. Can you meet me at such and such pawn shop? Imagine that. They pawn my shit. Yeah, by all means, I'll meet you at the pawn shop. You know, when do you want to meet? Well, I ended up meeting him today at 2 p.m., and the only thing there was basically the bullshit that you, well, if you don't have a tool to put these things in, they're pretty much useless. So, no, none of the actual tools are there, just pieces and parts for actual tools. So, no, we don't have a recovery, but we do have a prime suspect, and... Well, if what he didn't tell me but made me kind of read between the lines is accurate, this little piece of bottom-dwelling scum will probably end up for many, many moons. And, well, I hope he picks his prison bitch name now because he's going to need one. How's that?
Well, that's definitely a good start due to the fact that, it's a good start in a few ways. If he only gave kind of like a little bit of stuff here and there, he may for sure actually have an idea of, or obviously he has an idea, but he may actually come clean to lessen his sentence of where the rest of the stuff is. And give that information up.
Well, that's the anticipation. There's going to be a little pressure put on him.
No.
Frankly, if I can not go into too much detail, there was a young lady that went with him on two occasions, which were the two occasions that he went to the pawn shop with my possessions, that has a certain type of ring on her left ring finger that is now an accomplice unless he wants to play fair. Otherwise, they both go bye-bye. At this point, he is looking at grand larceny charges, felony class 3. I believe it makes him a 3-peat. So, yeah, they're going to spank his pee-pee hard. But the option as it was discussed to me was, well, if he wants to play ball and he wants to give up the rest of the possessions, I don't take him and his wife and then call CPS to take care of their child while they go serve time.
Ooh.
So that's where it sits. But, yes, they do know who pawned my possessions. A small portion of them. Of the approximate $4,000 worth of shit that disappeared, I probably got back, I don't know, $100. So,
well,
yeah.
Not, No. You did get more than that because they do have the prime suspect. And
as of this point in time, no, I don't have more than that. I have about $100 worth of my stuff back out of about $4,000.
No. Monetary, yes, you were absolutely right. But the fact that they did find the person and the, you know, prime suspect is huge because that could have just been a contractor that stole your stuff because they couldn't afford it. You know what I mean? And you would never see it again unless you happen to be on a job site and there was a specific marking and you saw what it was and, oh, where'd you get that? And it was pretty quick.
I'll give local law enforcement. They go to actually three different jurisdictions have passed information around. Now, pawn shops here in this area, whether you take an item in to sell it or pawn it, they have to give their inventory check-in that day to local law enforcement, only their jurisdiction. Now, Illinois is a tad different. You have Clark County, or what county is Chicago sit in?
Chicago proper is Cook County.
Okay.
And
yeah, Cook County, not Clark. And then outside
Crook.
Chicago.
It's C-R-O-O.
But, yeah, you have Cook County that houses the city of Chicago. Is Naperville also in Cook County?
No, Naperville is in DuPage County.
Oh, okay. But you have other small jurisdictions inside Cook County?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the way that Virginia does it, you have the city proper, which is Richmond. Then on its outlying area, you have the counties. The county and the city have their own jurisdictions. So inside the actual city of Richmond, you have the Richmond Police Department and you have Richmond Sheriff Department. Then outside Richmond, you have Henrico County that also has Henrico County Police Department and Henrico County Sheriff Department. They don't overlap. So at this point, I have Hanover County Sheriff Department. They don't have Hanover County Police Department. You have Henrico Police Department and Richmond City Police Department. All three share information from the pawn shops within their jurisdiction. And in the midst of all of this came a photograph of my primary tool bag with one of my cases that had my initials Sharpied on it. Well, once the detective in my jurisdiction saw that photograph from the pawn shop, which, by the way, I've got to give great kudos to the pawn shop proprietor because he said he felt something was fishy about it. He took the merchandise in, paid out of his pocket, basically, knowing that it just felt fishy, and then notified law enforcement that, hey, I took this in, and, you know, it just didn't feel right to me. So he's out the money that they paid for the pawn until restitution, which I'm not thinking he's ever going to see again. But I got a feeling that I'll probably drop in the dime or three. So the three jurisdictions shared information of what's been checked in at their local pawns, and this detective just happened to catch one item and keyed in first initial, first name, first initial, last name, came back with me as a victim of vehicular burglary, and called me up and said, hey, can you give me an identification on some of the stuff that you had that's taken? Yeah. I started describing things, and he's like, well, I think we got some of your stuff back. However, it's all just the small incidentals. But, you know, that's a step in the right direction. At least now we know who the jackass is that most likely. Now, I guess you have to say the suspect who is probable as far as the one that stole my shit. You know, because he allegedly, because we haven't convicted him yet. So, yeah. But the detective did say that he was going there immediately from meeting with me at the pawn shop, giving me back my stuff, and he was going to discuss the alternatives and see what else he could find in the house. And he said, either the guy plays nice with me and, you know, just kind of goes, well, you know, open your trunk and let's transfer some stuff, or I just take him into custody and I wait, you know, an hour or two to get a warrant, and we just go have one hell of a ransack party in his house. Which I like the way he put that. I volunteered. I said he may have taken a lot of my tools that I used to build, but he didn't take enough of my tools that I used to destroy shit. So I'll be happy to come help you. He started laughing. He said, no, I don't think this is a spectator sport, and I don't think there's victim participation allowed in this one. Damn.
Yeah,
you know,
there might be a little emotional involvement that the police wouldn't put into the amount of demolition that you would, just out of spite.
Well, I mean, there's potential that he has hidden my loot in his walls, and I would have to use the 8-pound sledgehammer that, you know, didn't disappear to open the walls and look for my loot. And, you know, he may have lifted up floorboards. I would have to remove the floorboards, which, you know, I did go drop a sizable dollar amount and buy a new saw. So I can cut the floorboards up and look underneath them to see if he hid stuff there too. Bastard.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think that is, you know, if you get the access, you got to check, because who knows if it was something small, that this wasn't the first time that he was in your truck, that maybe he grabbed, you know, one or two things here and there in the past, and you got to recover those too. So you might as well just go through and, yeah, just turn into a demo job.
Oh, I'm thinking by the time I get completed, they're probably going to have to condemn the property because it'll be such a wreck. But I do have a kind of a chuckle on this whole story. I haven't shaved in about a week. Normally I keep the little goatee action going, but you know, now I've got to fill in between the ears and the jaw, or the chin. One of the things that they pulled out of my primary tool bag was this very nice, probably $150 Braun shaver that you would, like, you know, put in the carrier. It goes in the solution and cleans and sharpens the heads each time you use it. Detective looked at me and goes, is this yours? And I went, does it look like I... That very well is mine. He starts laughing, going, no, I'm not thinking you use a shaver very often. I went, okay, you got me. It's not mine. So it does show that this jackass has been into other people's properties. From what I understand, they actually suspect him on residential burglaries also. So he's, I'm not allowed to say this because, you know, it's personal information about him, but he's kind of understood to be perhaps a heroin addict.
Well, if you're not allowed to say it, you just did.
Well, no, I hinted towards it. It was a hint. But, you know, I guess it's a damn good thing that my stuff got stolen and I had some identification on my stuff that could be picked up. Because God knows, if this dude's breaking into people's houses, it could end up being very ugly. I promise you, if you break into my house at night, it's going very bad. And I live in a rather redneck portion of town. Pardon the slang. If you're a redneck, I don't mean any offense. And myself and my maroon neck, you know, mean no harm with that. But, you know, now I lay me down to sleep, a Glock beside me shall I keep, you know. You break into my house at night, odds are good you're going to be found here in the morning.
That's, yeah, that's, that's definitely a possibility with you. But
yeah.
So, on a happy note though, what are we here for today? How?
Well, we're here for Full Spectrum Radio.
Yeah.
I mean
the subject matter.
Radio network.
The subject matter of the day. How just cool is it?
Wait.
Yes?
We have a subject matter of the day?
Surprisingly.
What the hell?
All right. Yeah,
have we
yeah,
ever
you're...
really had a day that we had a subject, a subject matter? No. But I think you want to talk about Parafest 2013, and you want to talk with Scott Gerhardt.
There we
that
go.
That would be my guess.
So
that would be my guess.
So I literally have just one question here. Are you looking forward to the 6th, 7th, and 8th of next month, or what?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess if I had to actually put it into terms, you know, whether I'm looking forward to it or not, does a high school jock look forward to senior prom in the first? Never mind. I didn't go there.
You implied there. You didn't go there. You implied there.
Oh, now, see, if you took your dirty mind there, that's your fault. I was thinking first formal dance.
Bullshit. I know you too well to where I can call you just a damn liar on that one.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our PG-12 portion. Now we will proceed into the PG-37 portion of the Full Spectrum program. If you're not eligible for retirement within the next decade, please tune out now. As you may be offended.
Or if you're a crazy old SOB like Dennis, stay tuned.
Yes, it only gets better, folks.
Yes, it does.
See,
no,
Steven,
who's talking here? Come on, dude.
I was. I'm sorry if my interrupting stopped your sentence.
Yeah, because Scott's on hold. I talk to you all the damn time. I don't want to. I really don't want to talk to you. I'd rather talk to somebody who's.
Fine.
No.
I will mute myself. I will mute myself. You have a nice show now.
Get your ass back here. Dennis.
I'm here, but you're not doing a hell of a lot. If I'm
yeah.
not talking,
okay.
You're sitting there going, hey, talk.
Yes, and in a second, I'll give him a cue, not an actual literal second there, Scott. But I want to bring Scott in a moment. But, yes, Parafest 2013 is going to be September 6th, 7th, and 8th at the Sands in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Dennis and I are going to be cruising up there along with, it's almost an uncountable number of just horror film people and TV celebrities and paranormal people are just a top notch, and I'm looking forward to it because there's a ton of our friends that are going to be there, and everybody's going to be under one roof. So it's going to be a blast, and I'm definitely really looking forward to it. And Scott is in with us now. What's going on, buddy? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just lovely. How about you guys?
Yeah. Can't complain.
Good.
Dennis can.
I can, but no one gives a shit.
No, we really don't. I mean, maybe later, but right now we don't care.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Dennis, you and Scott are going to get along swimmingly.
Yes, it sounds that way.
So,
hey, thanks for joining us tonight, Scott.
Yeah, thank you. it's definitely, I've talked to you on, you know, the phone and text and all that stuff, and but not really in a, I was going to call it relaxed setting, but I guess you really can't call it that. So how's it going as the time is ticking down until the main event?
Oh, you know what? It's just an outcrop pouring of support and just, it's amazing. You know, it really is. You know, I never intended on this thing getting to the level that it is. But, you know, I had a great talent coordinator help me out, and she's done an upstanding job, bar none, probably better than I could ever imagine she would have. You know, securing excessive amounts of talent that just make this event something beyond my expectations. And from what I've been hearing, beyond a lot of people's expectations. So it's an honor and a privilege to work with a group of people that, you know, see the vision that I had of putting together an event like this, and we were able to bring it, you know, verbatim and actually make it happen. So it's just it's an honor and a privilege to get everybody together and, you know, do this at one center location and just enjoy it, you know, have a great time with everybody.
Yeah, it's looking at the people that are involved in this, and Dennis and I have had a bunch of them, you know, I'd say of the paranormal end, I'd say we'd had about 60 to 65% of the people on the show that we still continue a friendship with, and all throughout the country, and you know, everybody is, that's one thing that I have to say about, I'll call it 92% of the paranormal community, is extremely supportive and will go the extra mile if you do need help or, you know, you need something. And everybody's there for each other and promotes each other. And it's phenomenal. And Dennis and I have created some really, really great friendships through just talking with them. And, you know, people look at them and, like, especially the people that you see on TV, and it's like, oh, yeah, they're on, you know, they're on TV and they're unapproachable. Well, that's not exactly true. It's, yeah, you know, a lot of people go around on their own dimes just to be out and meet people and hang out with friends and everything. And I can't exactly call it a full family, but it's a great network niche to be involved with. It's definitely some stuff has come up to where I've had an issue with something or something went down or something like that, and you know, post something on Facebook about, oh, you know, this happened or that happened, and it's like, oh, well, what can I do? And it's somebody that you completely would not expect to respond or even pay attention. So I just, you know, I'm excited as hell to be able to go down there and see some of the you know, workshops and everything else that's going on and be able to talk with everybody. And I'm extremely, extremely excited for Dennis and I to be there doing live broadcast and talking with some of the people that are there. So that's definitely going to be fun. Right now I just confirmed number 14 who's going to stop by and say hello on the shows, because we're going to be broadcasting live the 6th, 7th, and 8th. So that'll be fun.
I'm sure it will be. It's, you know, I've said this on many interviews. I look forward to the pictures on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, the YouTube videos that people are going to be making, because I'm going to be so busy I won't even get to enjoy it, you know. But, you know, I'm not there to enjoy it. I'm there to make sure everybody else does. And it's just going to be, I think it's going to be the first of many wonderful events here in the Lehigh Valley, simply because there aren't many things going on here in the Valley for paranormal and horror. And that's kind of why I picked this area, because there's really not much here. There's a lot up north. There's a lot down south. There's some out west, but there's nothing right here. I got a pretty good central location to New York, New Jersey, you know, Virginia, Delaware, Maryland, Ohio, you know, this whole little metropolis on this side of the country here. And people can get here within 3-4 hours. I mean, it's not a lengthy drive, but it's a beautiful town. It's a haunted town. Everybody knows it. A lot of locations are haunted and have been investigated on some of these TV shows where these people are actually coming in at. So it's going to be great, man. It really is. We're really looking forward to it. We can't wait to see all the fans and all the people and just really have a great time.
Yeah, Dennis, I gave me a little. Dennis, what's the new challenge again? Dennis and I have challenges that we put out. Dennis never thought that I could actually leave him speechless because he just thinks he's so great. So, and has an answer
for
everything.
I'm just that cool.
And I left him speechless one night when we were doing the show, and he literally had absolutely no response. I'm going to have to clip that audio clip and just play it just to bask in my glory of, yes, I actually did it.
Don't let him bullshit you, Scott. He runs the board. The bastard muted me.
What's the new challenge here?
Honestly, I don't remember. We've rolled through so many different ones, and I'm not even sure what we've decided the latest challenge is going to be.
Oh, yeah, no, you called it Monday night. The latest challenge is that let me see if I can remember your exact words. Wipe the floor with my ass at blackjack?
No, I told you to bring... Now, Scott, I'll tell you what. Scott, I will employ you as the impartial judge. When Matt is out pimping himself in the parking lot to stay in game, will that count as a victory for me?
You know, I guess we'll have to determine that at the time. I don't want to bear a false witness this early in the game. You know what I mean? Like, let's give him his fair chance, I guess we should say.
Right. Well, I fully agree. Loser until proven a winner. I mean, winner until proven a loser.
That's only fair. It's only fair.
So going back just a tad when you were talking about the coordinators and all that stuff, how long has this event actually been in the works? Like when you first got the idea and first had to sit down and all that, and how many people are involved in putting this together, because just the amount of people and the quality of talent that's going to be there is just staggering. So I was just wondering, like, time frame wise, how long did it actually take to from start until September to put all this together?
Well, you know, the funny thing is we're still working on stuff, and I think we'll probably be working on stuff up until the day of, and I think that's what's going to keep us apart from everybody else. We didn't just pick 8 names out of a hat, get them, and then that was it. You know, we're constantly finding new ways to add things and modify things and, you know, set this event apart from everyone else's. So as far as time frame goes, you know, I started the company about 17 months ago, and I'd say that was the exact moment when we really started buttoning things up. I mean, I had the location 17 months ago. I got, you know, my first paranormal guests about 15 months ago. I think it was October of last year that I think it was like October of last year was when I got my first big name stars. We had a few sign on before that, but, you know, I think the first major stars came on in October, beginning of October. So about 9 months, 10 months, we've been really hammering it. My talent coordinator, her name's Carrie Ann Versace. She has been working nonstop to secure the right mix of people. And, I think she's done an ups- outstanding job. She's been phenomenal. She's done a lot of the artwork for us. In fact, almost every piece of it she's done. She's great with the graphics, and she's just done a phenomenal job. And without her, you know, we definitely wouldn't be having this event at this magnitude. You know, and then I have a merchandising guy, Jim, he's doing great. I have an accountant, Jody, she's doing great. She's helping with a lot of the other stuff that's going on, you know, behind the scenes stuff. So, you know, I've got I got to throw kudos out to my media guy, Aaron Sagers. He's been, you know, really pushing us at all the conventions across the United States and really hitting us good in some of the, you know, the cosplay events and with the magazines, the radios, the TVs. I mean, he's been just relentless with his pursuit of promoting Parafest. And, you know, I think what's going to make this place great is the fact that we got the right location in the right area, in an area that needed it, you know. And then we brought the right people in. You know, I got a phenomenal team. And the thing is, you can't put an event on like this without good people. So that's where we're at.
Now, if you don't mind dropping names, who was the first paranormal, as you put it, paranormal stars that agreed to be a part of Parafest 2013?
Well, I can tell you that the first official people we booked, that I booked, were Bruce and Dave Tango and Steve from Ghost Hunters.
Okay. See, well, you're welcome to drop names on this show. God knows Full Spectrum Radio is all about name dropping. Isn't it, Matt?
Yeah. It definitely is about name dropping, and I think Dennis and I, if we actually contact these people about sponsorship, we could probably actually retire by now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talk about just anything and everything. There's no telling what the hell we'll come up with. You know, I was talking about all my tools that got stolen, so I'm dropping the Rigid name left and right, and, you know, just one thing after another. But how do you, I mean, back to Parafest 2013, how do you convince people that they want to be part of this? You just go, hey, you know, Bruce, Dave, I'm going to do this Parafest thing, and, you know, y'all in? Or, you know, how do you actually approach somebody to be a part of this?
Well, you definitely, you know, you go through their management team. You know, we went through Ideal Entertainment, had some conversations with them, and negotiated the contracts and decided what would be in the best interest of the event on my part, and he agreed on who I thought should be there, and, you know, the rest was history.
Well, that's cool. Now, oh, by the way, huge kudos on the nuptials. Congratulations on that. Matt, correct me.
Yes, I am going to correct you.
Matt's been talking about the Fox Cities Paracon also, and he's the one that just did the nuptials, right?
Yes.
All right.
Tim Miley. Yeah, Tim Miley.
Yeah.
And, you know, well,
Searchfoot. Yeah. I'll just sit over here and mind my own business. How's that?
Yeah, shut up, Dennis. No, and, well, Scott, also, this is probably something, like Fox Cities Paracon is a great event. Tim, who's running it, it's actually not that far from me. I'm going up there on the 24th for that, which is going to be really cool. I know a lot of the people, and for what's going on up there, I have to say it's a small event, but it's a big event, and he has people from all over the country that are coming in. I'm trying to bring up the flyer right now. Paul Bradford's going to be there. Two of my actual from Ghost Hunters International. Two of my really good friends that are local are going to be up there. He got, speaking of Aaron Sayers, he got Scott Grunewald is going to be up there. And Scott and I over the time have become really, really good friends. So going to run up there and check that out on the 24th. So that's where Dennis's confusion is. But at the same time that he's been planning this Paracon, and tell me if this is even a possibility, and you being somebody planning a Paracon, he also planned a wedding. I have to give him kudos for that.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. We had a wedding scheduled already at ours.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
At the Parafest.
Unfortunately, at Parafest, yeah, there was going to be a wedding at Parafest. Unfortunately, due to some paperwork, due to a different state, they were unable to secure the proper paperwork to pull it off. So we did have to postpone it. But, yeah, the couple actually got engaged in Ohio at a paranormal event and decided that they wanted to get married at my event. So it was kind of cool. We were very excited about it. You know, and honestly, they're beautiful people, and, you know, I love them both to death, Tracy Ray and David Roundtree. They're good people, and I was honored that they wanted to get married at my event. But unfortunately, it won't happen. So he said that I have to hurry up and get another one planned so that he can get married at that one. So.
Well, I got to tell you, I don't know how damn many hours you've got into the planning and negotiations and everything, but the list that you have for this event is just phenomenal. And I am deeply, deeply honored that you want Matt and myself to be there and you know, doing live broadcasts and so forth. So thank you very much for that, and I hope my fans, well, our fans also thank you as much.
Well, you know, don't be surprised if, you know, we don't have a few more come on yet before this thing takes off. So keep that under your hat. Don't let anybody know. We might have more people sign on.
Oh, yeah. I won't tell our listeners.
Yeah, definitely don't tell them.
Yeah, I won't tell them there's possible, you know, additional personalities coming. You know, we'll just keep that between the three of us.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, we're really good at you know, keeping secrets, aren't we, Matt?
Yes, secrets and discretion are the name of the game on Full Spectrum Radio.
I see that.
Yeah, nobody, and, you know, fortunately, nobody listens to the show. So, it is one of those things. It's a three-way phone call is basically all it is.
Good.
Yeah,
we'll go with that.
Pretty much. Yeah. Last I knew, the broadcast antenna was very short. Or wait, was that? No, that was a secret about Matt, but we won't talk about that one.
Good.
Yeah. We have a very limited audience. Don't worry about it. The, you know, six figures of people that are listening, they're probably asleep by now. Most of them are probably on Geritol. You know, Big Ray, who's also in with us from Ghost Raps Radio, I see him in the chat there. Well, he says that, you know, he has his hearing aids turned up, but, you know, he's probably got weak batteries by now, I'm sure. So he probably didn't even hear either.
Good, yeah. Well, you know, in regards to, you know, short antennas, you know, they say that people overcompensate. So, Matt, do you have anything that's, you know, large, maybe like a boat or anything,
or
that
maybe
might
the...
be overcompensating for something else. I don't know. I'm just asking. Do you have anything like that?
Or maybe the tires and lift kit on a Jeep or something, perhaps.
Oh, his Jeep's lifted too. Wow. You got problems,
yes,
brother.
It's ironic. It's ironic. The Jeep is high in the air, and so are... Oh, never mind.
All right. My Jeep will buy the air.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Scott.
My Jeep pie in the air and I'm riding low in the pants.
There you go. There you go. Well,
yeah,
at least you can smile about it, you know?
Yeah, I do have a boat. I do have a listed Jeep, but in my defense on the Jeep, I haven't
Sorry
done
about your penis.
Anything. Thank you. I appreciate the condolences.
Was that out loud?
My Jeep externally at the moment, except for tinting the windows, I have not modified at all. It came with the 2-inch lift sitting on 33s. That wasn't anything that I did to it.
No, but you chose to buy that one rather than a stock one.
Also, in my defense on that, I bought an Audi TT, little tiny coupe. It wasn't a convertible.
Sports car.
Shut up.
Let's see.
I also have
Let's
a motorcycle,
see.
And I also have a Nissan 300ZX. So, yeah,
so
maybe I do have some toys.
Wait. What kind of motorcycle?
Oh, you ass. You asked that crotch rocket.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I have a Yamaha R1 crotch rocket. Yes.
R1.
You know what?
After puberty.
Here's one thing I do have to say, though. Every single toy that I have is an extremely
battery
fun extension.
Or otherwise.
No, it's an extremely fun extension. I don't care what anybody says.
Oh, there you
Bash
go.
Me
good,
all you want.
Good cover.
Bash
good
me
cover.
All you want, but it's a very, very, very fun extension. So, to get off of my penis now.
Oh, trust me, brother. I haven't been on your penis. That ain't happening.
No, I appreciate that. I definitely do. So let's get back into a different direction. Direction.
Well, Scott, are you sure you want us broadcasting live from Parafest 2013?
We'll just keep you away from the kiddie table. That's all.
Oh, it's
Dennis and I actually did have a conversation about that, and yes,
it's going to be
a lot more. It's going to be a lot more PC than our normal shows. Just to let you know, so guest wants to take it in a direction, cool, but no, we will be on our best behavior, which is probably most people's worst. But no. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's definitely going to be.
I was going to say, that's not saying a hell of a lot. I will promise you this, though, Scott. Those that do listen to our broadcast from Parafest 2013 will absolutely love the broadcast. The guests that we interview will have a good time. That's what we're all about. My brain cell and a half, I can't manage to make them, it's a brain cell and a half, but it's three halves. I can't get all three of them on the same path. I keep hoping that at least two of the halves of a brain cell will come together and give me a full brain cell, but I'm not thinking it's likely.
You know what? I'm stuck on this whole thing about Matt. You know, I got one final question, which is going to answer. Listen, this is going to tell me the truth about Matt. And here's my question to you, Matt.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. In your wallet or on your cell phone, do you have a screensaver or pictures of your toys?
No. In my photos, like in my photos on my phone, yes,
like,
I do.
Are you the kind of guy that he has a screensaver? He pulls up and there's his, you know, boat in the river, or his bike popping a wheelie, or his 300ZX doing a burnout. I mean, do you have any of that stuff like as a screensaver? Or do you carry pictures of your toys?
I do not have it as a screensaver. No, I do not.
But a wallpaper.
How
about as a wallpaper?
No, not as a wallpaper either. My wallpaper is on my phone is the CPR logo. That's the only thing personal that I have that I would say qualifies for that.
Okay, all right, that's fine. I'll leave it alone. But I was curious about that.
That's what she said. I'll leave it alone. I need to just mute myself. Go ahead, Matt. Just mute me. I know you got the board. You're hovering that mute button going, that son of a bitch. Go ahead.
And you know what? I shouldn't egg you on. I apologize. I'm sorry, Matt.
No. I welcome it with open arms because I think it's funny personally. So, shit.
Just look at it this way. You can't, what?
All right. I retract my previous statement.
Oh. What have you got?
I shouldn't even said anything about
it.
I should not have even gone there. My desktop background on my computer at work. I'll take my phone, I'll plug it in to the USB to upload the photos to that file so I can save them on a thumb drive, just so I have them.
Uh-huh.
And
good excuse.
No, that's honest to God truth. And what had happened is one of them that I uploaded of my Jeep is it ended up getting saved as the desktop background. So
it was
your
accidental.
I don't know. When I minimized the screen after I was done, it was there, and I was like, that actually looks actually pretty cool on my desktop. I'm like, oh, screw it, I'll leave it. So, yes, I guess you were, damn it, I hate when you're right.
Now, is this the picture of the Jeep crawling up the little stone in Mom and Dad's driveway?
Yeah, where I parked it on the rock in front of my parents' house. Yep.
Oh, you call it a rock. Okay. I'm good with that.
It's over knee high. I'm not, you know, rock climbing in the damn thing. But I was like, I saw it, and I was like, oh, what the hell? Let's see if I can park on top of it. And I did. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Put it this way, Scott, I'm the douchebag that owns a lifted Jeep Wrangler with Mickey Thompson mud tires on it, and I've never been off-road. Personally, I believe that's a sin. Am I wrong on that?
You are.
And meanwhile, I'm the douchebag that owns the big-ass Dodge Cummins quad cab that was 2 months old and had the son of a bitch sunk to the pumpkins out in the mud.
Nothing wrong
so,
with that.
Yeah, well, actually, in this one there was, because I had to leave my truck sit out in the middle of BFE overnight while I figured out how I was going to get the damn thing out. My only thought was I had buddies with heavy equipment. I thought I was going to have to crawl a excavator or bulldozer back there, and it was literally a mile and a half back down the power line easement, but it's sitting on the pumpkins. 2 month old truck. Now those that, and I'm not tooting my own horn, the window sticker on this thing is $43,000, and I stuck that son of a bitch. Well, the step boards were on the mud.
Wow.
But I made an amazing discovery that day. Well, that moment. When the pumpkins hit the dirt, the day is done. Grab your beer, walk out of the mud, walk out to hard surface, and call your wife to come get you because you're not driving home.
And I'm sure that ride home is always a fun one.
Well, yeah, because she's going, you're going to get my car all muddy. I don't have an option. The damn mud's halfway to my knees. Meanwhile, here's Matt sitting on 33s, and I'm on stock tires going, son of a bitch, I really wish I had 33s.
Right, right.
You can have them. The 33s, the Edge Performance parts that are, see, there goes another name drop. What the hell is wrong with us, Dennis? But, no, the Edge Performance stuff, the kit was already on it, but it has the bigger throttle body, the fuel position sensor, the timing advance, like all that stuff on it. I get 9 miles to the damn gallon. I do not want to take it out into the field on a long track and run out of gas. Hence also why I'm not driving to Parafest. If I had my Audi, I wouldn't even book the plane ticket. I would have drove. I love driving, but not something where I have to almost finance every tank of gas because it costs so damn much.
We'll bring the 300 down.
Now, that see, doesn't
I tried
better because, shit, that's got motor work done to it.
I tried to get him to bring the damn 300.
What year is it?
It's 1990, the first year of the newer body, or the first year of the last body style of the 300 before it went to the 350.
Yep. Well, you know, I got to be honest with you, and I don't like to admit this because, you know, I drag race V8s, but my son is addicted to Nissans. He's got 240s, and he's got, you know, we went and looked at a couple of the your body style 300s, you know, the twin turbos and stuff. We just can't find one that we like yet, you know, but we've been looking for one of them. I told him he's going to get rid of all his 240s and all his extra parts, and he's going to buy one nice car, you know, and that's what our goal is right now, because I'm tired of getting phone calls at 12 o'clock at night. Hey, Dad, come pick me up. Something broke on the 240, you know, so he's a big Nissan guy. He loves them.
I've got one that will make both of you sick. Given the fact that we're talking about the Nissans and all of that, young man that my son hangs out with had a right-hand drive Supra. Had just dropped $12,000 in the new motor, the transmission and everything, all JDM equipment. Then found out that the importer was faking documentation, and the U.S. Customs Department came and yanked the bitch right off of the shop lot that he had putting the new $12,000 worth of motor and transmission in, and crushed the car as a illegal import. I don't know what the hell I would do at that point. I think I'd cry. You know, a right-hand drive Supra is it was a super-looking car. But, yeah, customs came, took the car right off the lot. Now the damn thing anybody can do about it.
But damn customs.
The motor, and the reason that he had just dropped $12,000 in the new motor and transmission was he was having the twin-turbo JDM motor put in it. For those that don't know, it's Japanese domestic market. They had to actually import the motor, which you know, makes me wonder if the damn car was imported illegally. Was the engine imported properly? But apparently the dude that he had paid, well, actually Daddy paid to have the car brought in, that guy was doing some shady shit and cost this boy his car.
Wow.
But, yeah, that's, so, I mean, if you've got the desire for, like, the 240s and, you know, things like that, Scott, by all means, watch the Craigslist and all of that for the Richmond area, because mm-hmm. I see them all the time down here.
Yeah, there's a big tuner scene up here, you know, the tuner kids up here. And, well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of guys. The newest thing is doing the LS swaps. They're taking the LS 5.8s, the 4.8s, the 5.3s, and the 6.0s, GM motors, and putting them in the 240s and just making, I mean, retarded horsepower. You know, there's a couple garages up here that have been doing it in cars, and they're putting single turbos on them and twin turbos. They're pushing 500, 600, 700, 800 horses out of these motors. And the funny thing is, you can get these 5.3 LS motors and 4.8s out of the U-Pullet yards for $200-$300. So these guys don't care. They'll run it at, you know, 30 pounds of boost and go down the track three times, blow it up, and then that weekend they're going up to the U-Pullet and pulling another one out for $300. But that's the big thing up here. Everybody's doing the LS swaps.
Yeah, it's crazy what you can do. And what kills me is the, like, you can, well, I've got a friend of mine that runs a little Civic. And he put a V6 out of something. I don't know what the hell he yanked it out of. But he actually had to cut the hood for the pulleys and belts and everything. And he was pushing 670 horsepower or some crap in a little Honda Civic. I'm like, how the hell do you make that thing hook up?
Yeah, they really don't.
I mean,
well, that's the beauty about the Nissan, though. I mean, you get a 300ZX, and, oh, Scott, I think it was about a month ago, and I don't believe that it sold. There was a never registered Nissan 300ZX twin turbo, completely stock. It had 3 miles on it, 1996. So the car has never been driven. It's at a dealership in, I think it was New York. Well, I mean, they're obviously asking big bucks for it. It's like $36,000 or something like that, but yeah, it was the chameleon green to black paint, the black interior with the suede. It wasn't, you know, and completely 100% stock, and still has a Nissan warranty out of 1996.
That's crazy.
They had it up at a buy it now like $37,000 or something like that, but yeah, I came across it on eBay. Mine is a 1990. It has cat-back exhaust. The resonator is eliminated, so it's a true dual.
Okay, yeah.
Went through, I had it's got the APR performance kit on it. I'm about 310 horse, something like that, on it. For naturally aspirated five-speed two-door, like not the horrible 2+2 they came out with. But my motor is actually coming out probably the end of October, or I'm going to send the whole car to, I don't know if you've ever heard of Fall Line Motorsports. They run in
no.
ALMS, they're the American Le Mans series.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Fall Line Motorsports, my buddy JP, I mean, they have a few, well, I can't even say a few M3s that have the M5 motor in them.
Yeah, okay.
Making ridiculous horsepower. They just built an Audi R8. Well, in the Le Mans series, you can't run an all-wheel drive car. It has to be a rear-wheel drive car.
Mm-hmm.
Their transmission alone on the R8 cost them $100,000. They have $680,000 into the Audi R8.
Oh, that's
plus
sick.
The price of the car. So
that's sick.
I have to say I kind of trust them with my motor.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Audis, either you love them or you hate them. And since I work on cars for a living, I hate Audis. I hate Volkswagens. To me, they're just the only good. The last time they made a good Volkswagen was the Beetle. That was the last good Volkswagen they made. I just they're problematic, and for me as a mechanic and the shop manager, they're just a pain to deal with. And Audis are just Volkswagens that cost more. I mean, that's all they are, you know.
Well, that brings a very good question, and we talked about this the other week, Matt. We were talking about the gas mileage and et cetera. Back in 87, 88, I had a buddy that had a Rabbit diesel that was getting 53-plus miles per gallon.
Oh, yeah.
Why can't they do that now? Is it
the government won't let them?
Thank you. That's exactly what I thought. Between the government, you know, they're losing so damn many millions on taxes that way. And, you know, the oil industry won't let them make a car do that. Now, they would absolutely shit themselves if they could get a hold of my truck. Like I said, I've got an 05 Ram quad cab Cummins, four-wheel drive. I drove 493, I think, from here to visit my daughter in Connecticut. I hit reset on the trip computer when I hit the interstate. When I got up there, I was at 29.3 miles per gallon. It's a 7,800-pound truck.
I was going to say, yeah.
The only thing I've done to it, I took out the factory air filter, left in the factory air box, just the filter replacement. I put in an air raid, I keep it clean, and I put a Super Chips programmer. Now, see, there's two name drops, Matt. We need to get air raid and we need to get Super Chips on our sponsor list, damn it. And ironically, when I first put in the programmer, the first thing I did was put it on performance. I want to see what the damn thing will do. Holy Christ, is that truck scary fast. So then I went, okay, well, I've had it for a couple of days. And, you know, when you constantly keep your foot on the floor, you get, like, really shit mileage. But if you drive like an intelligent individual, you get phenomenal mileage. And I went, okay, well, hell, if I'm getting this good, and at that point I was getting 24 and 25 miles to the gallon. I've got 195,000 miles on the truck, by the way. I set it to the economy. The truck felt like I had a frickin' anchor behind it. It couldn't take off from a light to save its ass. It was like it had to scratch its ass first and go, okay, so you want to go now. Well, I think we can do that. Oh, this sucks. I'm getting 26. I went, okay, well, shit, I was getting 24, 25 on performance if I drove with a level head. So I've kept it on performance ever since. And I drove it to Connecticut. GPS, that got stolen, by the way, bastard, said that I had an average speed of 68.7 miles per hour on the traveling speed, you know, speed up, slow down, this, that, and the other. So at an average of 68 miles an hour, for 493 miles, I did 29.3 miles per gallon for an average. That's pretty damn good.
That ain't bad.
Now, why can't the manufacturers do that?
Because it kills the aftermarket, like boosts and all that stuff. And also they want you to buy more fuel.
That would be it. The government won't let them make a vehicle like that. I mean, if they...
You know, I don't know how true this is, but, you know, my dad, of course, is substantially older than me, but he said back in the 50s, they had actually produced a carburetor that got an estimated, like, some retarded amount, like 75 miles to the gallon, and the government actually took bought the rights to it and the patent on it and destroyed it. But even the carburetors back in the day, they were able to manipulate the needles and the floats and get it to the point where it was actually getting unbelievable fuel economy. Now, mind you, gas back then was, you know, 8 to 10 cents a gallon, but it's the point that the technology's been there. You know, there are people out there that know how to design these things, and they are the ones that are kept in the closet because the government doesn't make money. Or my opinion is the government, you know, profits from the sale of oil. You know, they get money from it when they buy it. They get money when they sell it. You know, and if everybody was making, you know, 50-plus miles to the gallon, that would be an astronomical hit to the pocketbook of the government. So they make sure that don't happen.
Well, most definitely, and I agree. And I've had that opinion for, you know, 20 years. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, we'd go buy a six-pack and put $5 in the tank. And, you know, you'd spend $7. And you could cruise all night long.
Sure.
Now, I mean, my truck, I mean, I'm not going to lie, $5 in fuel, I get the filler wet, the filler neck wet, and that's about it.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny, I have an 03 Ram 1500 with a Hemi in it. And, you know, I swear by Dodge, I will never buy another truck. I mean, Dodge has been the best thing for me since I bought my first one back in 86. And, you know, Dodge has come a long way. They had a real rough time, you know, in the mid-70s to the, you know, late 80s. But I'll tell you, they've come full circle, and they probably make the best product out there as far as trucks go. Not taking anything away from Ford or Chevy, but for me personally, Dodge is where it's at. And I'll tell you, this Hemi is horrible in the city. But I'll tell you, she's pretty good on the highway. You know, I'll get 19 miles on the highway. And to me, that's good. But here's the thing. One thing I can't stand is people that buy these cars today. They buy, you know, they'll buy a new Camaro. They'll buy, you know, whatever, you know, a big truck. And then they're like, well, I'd come, but I don't feel like spending the gas money. Well, then why'd you buy it? You should have bought a Prius. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Don't buy a car that has a big V8 or has a diesel, you know, knowing you have a heavy foot or you want to enjoy the V8, and then complain about gas mileage. You know, that don't buy it then, you know. Get yourself a little Geo Metro or something, you know. I just can't stand when people do that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Scott, I will make you this promise, brother. 6th, 7th, and 8th, we got 3 days that my truck is going to be in Bethlehem for Parafest. I will take you for a ride in my truck and let you feel what a launch feels like in a 7,800-pound truck that just makes you sick. I mean,
absolutely.
I promise you, brother, you will fall in love with this truck. Now, have I had problems with it? Yeah, I've had some troubles with it.
All
one of the troubles, Not yet. They're due now, but that's 195,000 miles. The first issue that I had was at 63,000 miles. And when I bought the truck brand new, comes with 7 year, 70,000 mile warranty on the drivetrain. Well, about 62, 63,000 miles, I noticed the transmission acting kind of funny, going to second gear.
Mm-hmm.
I went, okay. Now, I pull a trailer. At that time, I was working a shitload, and I'm a contractor for a living. My trailer is probably about 6,000 pounds. So I noticed second gear was starting to slip a little bit going in. And I went, well, you know, pardon me, but fuck you. You're not making me pay $4,000 for a new transmission to, you know, buy it and get it installed. I'm going to make sure this bastard dies while it's under warranty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have this 6,000-pound trailer locked to the truck, and I'm doing a whole shot. Like, power brake, four high launches. So it's hitting that second gear on the automatic transmission, and it's just slipping clutch like nobody's business. It took me about 500 miles, and I smoked second gear completely out. Well, I take it into the shop, and I go, I'm not real sure what's going on, but between, like, when the transmission shifts, it just goes, and launches again. So I'm not real sure. You know, I'm playing the stupid card. I know full well I've blown the second gear clutch packs out of the transmission. Well, they have to open it up and look at everything. And he's like, holy Christ, dude, what have you done? And I went, I drove my truck. Well, the technician knows. I mean, you can't. If you get a technician that knows what the hell he's doing, he knows what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, it started to slip, didn't it? I went, yes, sir. And then it started to slip a shitload worse. And I'm still under warranty, right? He starts laughing, going, yeah, you're still under warranty. And I went, ha-ha. Well, then they sold, you know, under warranty, they don't give you a brand new one. They give you a remand. Well, that one, the torque converter locked up on. So you're sitting in the red light, and it feels like you're power braking.
Yeah.
That lasted about 1,200 miles. And then I had to put another one in it because that one's warranted for 3,000 miles. Now, I'm still under my 70,000, but that transmission only carries 3,000-mile warranty. So they put another one in it. That one, strangely, the same exact thing happened. The torque converter locked up on it. So at 72,000 miles, they put another transmission in it, which is number three, and I'm still on it at 195,000 miles. But what they did, they used the same exact transmission that they put in the SRT10 with the V10 Viper motor in that pickup. They put that same exact transmission and backed it up to that inline six Cummins. And it just can't handle the torque.
Right.
But if you don't drive like a complete raving lunatic, the transmission will hold up very well.
Yes.
But I've got to say, I mean, the only thing I've ever actually had to do to this truck, there's one injector lead that has failed twice. The transmission. Other than that, man, this truck has been nothing but phenomenal. And, you know, it's an 05, so it's nearly 8 years old now. With 195,000 miles, I had to replace the batteries. Okay, big deal. That's it. And I absolutely love the truck. And to be able to push a truck that damn big at 29 miles to the gallon down the interstate, and, by the way, to be able to smoke a Mustang GT light-to-light, that thing kicks ass.
Mm-hmm.
But
so,
like I said, I promise you, Scott, when we get together at Fairfest, I'll take you for a ride in this thing. You already love your Dodge trucks. I will absolutely make you fall in love all over again with them.
Sounds good.
So, Scott, my post of the going a totally different way, does that make a little more sense now?
Talking about Printerfest a little bit,
talking about trucks, talking about Dodge and Ford and Jeep, but have you discussed this on any other interview you've been on?
No.
Yeah, see,
no,
that's our totally different direction thing that Dennis and I end up doing. We get on a subject and it just goes all out. I have to say, though, my first American reliable car that I've had a couple American cars throughout the years. My foreign cars have been way more reliable, and I've owned pretty much everything American under the sun, but the Jeep Wrangler that I have with that inline six, 2004,
yep.
I don't think I'd actually buy anything over a 2006 when they switched to the 3.8 or the 3.6 now.
Right.
They used the 3.8 in a Dodge Caravan, and how many of those have you seen over the past that come in and smoke like crazy because they blow oil seals left and right?
I've never seen that.
I know. I'm just making that up, aren't I?
Yes, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never seen a caravan with a bad trans. So, yeah, let's talk about something else.
Son of a bitch.
By the way, Scott's
full of
shit on that comment.
I just got sarcasm dripped all over my shoes. This sucks.
So,
no, but I do. I'll tell you what, you know, it's the automotive industry is beautiful because there's such a variety, you know. It's just the fun. I love the Chrysler products. I mean, I don't care who you are, I don't care what manufacturer, they all have their issues. You know, the way I look at it is this: import cars, you know, and I'm going to say it and I'm not going to really be proud of it, but they do make a better product initially. And, you know, one thing I've learned over the years of working on cars, an American car will break down 3 times a year. It'll be small, stupid, nickel and dime stuff. A foreign car won't break down for 5 years, but when it does, it usually costs the same as you spent on the American car the last 5 years. So it's a matter of convenience. Import cars, you do a lot less maintenance to, a lot less repairs to, but when they do finally need work, they usually cost more. Now, me, I'm kind of cheap, so I'd rather just spend a little bit every couple months than have to dump, you know, $3,000 at one shot, you know, on fixing lower control arms or, you know what I mean. So that's me. I'd rather just fix stuff periodically throughout the course of the year at a smaller amount.
Yeah. And yeah, it is a convenience factor because for work, I'm in the wheel industry, but not on the same line. I work in motorcycles, so I sell a Japanese product and I sell an American product. I sell Suzuki and Victory, which I have to say, and on the same lines. Kind of funny when you look at, you know, everybody knows Harley-Davidson tattoos, Harley-Davidson culture, all that stuff. I mean, it's there. Their 110 is coming up. We had a customer come in that bought a 2013 Street Glide. And he goes, you know what? I hate this thing. He had 1,047 miles on it. And he's looking, he's like, I've had this thing in the shop like 6 or 7 times. He goes, their 110 110th anniversary is coming up. You figure in 110 years that those jackasses could actually figure something out technology-wise. He goes, I have oil all over my garage. I have, pretty much I had to replace the drive belt, and it was nothing that he did, which was on a Harley, it's an 8.5 hour repair. So he was just going through this laundry list of problems that he's had with the bike. And he goes, I contacted Harley, I talked to him, and it was, you know, this, that, and the other thing. They kind of gave me the runaround, and they actually, and he was in today, so that's why it's fresh in my mind. But he goes, I wrote him a letter about a month and a half ago, and I got a response saying, well, I'm truly, truly sorry that you're having these problems, and that it's something that we're aware of, and other people are having these problems. It has nothing to do with, like, your specific bike or anything like that. Most of our stuff has been outsourced to China for parts and like, everything else. And they, in the bottom of the letter, and he brought the letter in, and I read it. He goes, Harley-Davidson as a motor company, I wouldn't recommend that you purchase another one of our products if you're having these discrepancies. Like, now Harley's telling their customers not to buy their bikes? Like, I took a picture of the letter. Like, that was absolutely crazy to me. Like, oh, well, don't buy our product because it is junk and we recognize that it's junk. I don't get that at all.
I you know what, and we don't know the full circumstance behind it. I mean, I'll tell you, I've driven many motorcycles in my life, and I refuse to buy anything but my Harleys. I love my Harley, and, you know, I will not downplay my passion for them. You know, it's more of a lifestyle. Remember when I was telling you I don't think people should complain when they buy a truck and, you know, bitch about the gas? You know, I don't think you should buy a Harley under the impression it's a foreign bike. You know what I mean? When you buy a Harley, you buy a Harley. And here's the thing. Harleys aren't meant for yuppies. They're not meant for lawyers. They're not meant for doctors. They're meant for regular people, you know? And I'm not saying doctors and lawyers shouldn't have them, because they should, because it's American, you know? Nothing's more American than a Harley-Davidson. But don't give yourself the false pretense that this is going to be a carefree carefree bike just because it's brand new. Every product has their issues. Now, I'm going to tell you, mine's an 03. I have a 100th anniversary Dyna Wide Glide. That thing does not drip one drop of oil. I've never had to do one thing to it. I bought, you know, the 03 because it's still carbureted. I love my carburetors. I am very against fuel-injected bikes because I don't think that that's part of Harley's history. But it is the way of the future. I mean, hell, even NASCAR went to fuel injection, and I hate NASCAR, but that's another story. I just love my Harley. I love the fact that it idles like, you know, you're dragging a bag of rocks across a tin roof. You know, that's part of the passion of Harley-Davidson. And, you know, I've committed myself to that many years ago, and I've stayed with it ever since. And, you know, when you're together with a bunch of guys on a Harley, if you ain't dripping oil or smoking or, you know, idling bad or spitting through the carburetor, I mean, you're just not one of the boys, you know. And I think that's the problem today. People forget where it all started, where it all came from, and then, you know, they think that just because it's brand new, it's going to be perfect. Hey, to me, my Harley is perfect, you know, and I swear by them.
Yeah, no, and that's, you know, I have no problem with Harley as a manufacturer or anything like that. I was just kind of flabbergasted when I saw that letter and actually read it. It's like they told him not to buy another one.
Maybe they got tired of bitching.
Well, that could be too, and I mean, come on, the automotive world, you know as well as I do that sometimes you just get to the breaking point. It's like, well, dude, you have so many issues, just fuck off. Like, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you remember back in the early 90s, late 80s, whatever in the hell it was, there was the thing that kept going around, like, I mean, I'm an old AOL guy. One of the things that you saw was IBM that said, you know, this is a live or whatever transcript between a plant and an IBM tech support guy. And it culminates to him going, you know what, just pack the thing back in the box and take it back where you bought it from because you're too stupid to own a computer. It boils back to the same thing. No matter how well you build it, you can build anything foolproof, and they'll make a better fool the next week.
Yeah, you can build you can in the automotive world. You can make something foolproof when you can't make it idiot-proof.
There you go. You can't fix stupid. That's what it comes down to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ron White is dead on that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fix stupid. You can go in and get LASIK surgery and they can give you 20/20. You can go in and get tuck and peel and you can look 20 years younger, but folks, you can't fix stupid. But God, I love Ron White, by the way. So, Scott, I'm going to yank us away from the boy toy program for a moment.
No problem.
We need to go back to Parafest 2013. Give us an idea how excited and why we should be so excited about this. Start dropping some names. Who have you got booked? You know, we know you busted your ass for, you know, a year and a half to get this thing booked. So tell us some names and...
We've got people from Ghost Hunters, which I've already mentioned, not to mention the co-founder, Mr. Grant Wilson, will be there. You know, we've got guys like Richard Keel coming, Tony Todd's coming, Ernie Hudson's coming. We got people from True Blood coming, from The Walking Dead, Supernatural. Chip Coffey will be doing a psychic reading. We got Tracy Ray and Amy Lynn doing a psychic workshop. You know, we've got the entire Macabre Film Fair coming. They're going to be showing short films all weekend long. We're doing Q&As. We're doing panels. We've got Michael Berryman coming. We've got the original two members of the original Addams Family coming. We got Wednesday, which is Lisa Loring, coming. And we actually have the original Cousin It coming, which is, you know, Felix. I mean, Phil is just, you know, 3'11" Italian, 78 years old, and an amazing man, had an illustrious career. You know, we've got the Friday night we have a Gurkha Cigars. You know, they're like the Rolls Royce of cigars. They're going to be there. We're going to have a cigar party on Friday night. Saturday night we're actually going to have a an undead celeb party. You know, you dress up as your favorite celebrity and make yourself look dead. You come, you dance, you drink, you have a good time. It's going to be a huge party. It's just constantly something going from the time we open until the time we close.
Well, I honestly, that was one thing that I've really, really been looking forward to is the party, and Sarah and I might have something up our sleeve that is going to kind of do the knock the socks off thing, if you will. Yeah, we've been passing back and forth, like images from Amazon and all the stuff that we can order to have a phenomenal costume, and I think we have it pretty much narrowed down. So
excellent.
Yeah. So I honestly am extremely looking forward to it. It's, you know, we as of had the plane ticket booked, got the room booked. We're good to go. So,
well, you know,
it's
going to be something for everybody. I mean, we, you know, I didn't even mention this. We're going to have a Ouija board session, you know, where people can become educated and talk and actually put their hands on a Ouija board and listen to an expert talk about it and where it came from, how it got developed. And who knows, if you walk into that that episode of, you know, that event of the, you know, Ouija board session, you know, you might actually walk out of there with your very own Ouija board if you wish to have one, you know. We have Grant Wilson coming with his new game. Grant Wilson's actually helped develop a board game. He did all the artwork for it. He did every phenomenal artist this guy is. And he'll actually be doing his gaming. You can go in, join. He'll review the game with you, tell you how it works. He'll have them for sale. We're, you know, we're trying to bring a mix to this event that you don't get at other events. You know, we're going to have cosplay people running around. We're going to have members from, you know, we're going to have stormtroopers running around from Star Wars. We're going to have, you know, zombies, Frankensteins. We're going to have Freddy Krueger. We're going to have Jason. We're going to have, you know, the Macabre Film Fair is bringing bands in. We're going to have music in rooms. We're going to have parties. And it's just going to – you're not going to be able to see it all. It's just going to be too much. So we can't wait. We're excited.
Yeah, and Dennis, yeah. Doesn't that sound kind of like a – and this is why I had to be a part of it.
It kind of sounds like an episode of Full Spectrum because you never know what the hell is about to occur.
Exactly. That you picked up on what I was throwing down. Yeah, no, I don't see how you can't
English,
come.
Matt.
What?
English. Spit it out, man. English.
No, I don't see how you can't come to this event, and no matter in any portion of it, not find something that you can't enjoy and have fun with.
Well, we've covered everything from soup to nuts. We've got everything from Bishop Longcoming, who is a renowned exorcist and a tremendous man of God. We've got all the way down to specialized demonologists coming to talk about demons and the darkness end of it. So we've got everything from top to bottom, left to right. The whole circle has been comprised here, from your black shirt paranormal investigators all the way up to the TV personalities. We've got just about everything that you could possibly want at an event. I believe, short of a blow-up bouncy wolf, you know, room, everything you could want.
Son of a bitch, he knows about our secret, Matt.
What, the blow-up bouncy room?
Yeah, the blow-up bouncy room. Son of a bitch. Now we got to come up with something else because he doesn't let that one leak out.
Listen, if it's that important to you, I'll make some calls. But you know, one of the nice things about this event is what? I would do that for you.
Well, if you can make some calls to like Crisco or, you know, someone like that, that would certainly help make the bouncy room more fun.
It would. But you know what? I'm worried about the YouTube repercussions. There's going to be a liability thing to worry about there. That's why we decided to not do Jell-O wrestling, you know. But like I said, I mean, there's no doubt about it that, you know, we've tr- try to encompass everything that could possibly be desired at an event. You know, one of the things I'm going to be doing, you know, after the event, I'm going to be contacting, you know, both some of the talent that was there, you know, and I'm going to ask them what do they think would make it better next year, you know, and I want people to be honest. I mean, with us having this first-time event on a level that we're at and the magnitude that we're trying to bring forth, you know, I don't think we're going to miss much, but if there is anything, we definitely want to improve on it. You know, next year, we definitely want to make it bigger and better than this year. So, you know, we're going to look to the people that were there. We're going to look to the people that have been doing this for years, who have been to other conventions, you know, and we're going to take advice and we're going to make it the event that everybody says, oh, I can't wait till next year, you know, and that's my ultimate goal.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely make sure that, you know, like Matt and I said at the beginning of the program, we're going to be running around doing live interviews. We'll be broadcasting live from ParaFest 2013. We will incorporate into our interviews what can make this better. And we'll give you as much feedback as we can possibly muster. Now, let me ask you this. And I'm going to pick on one of our audience members that's actually in the chat, which is one of my best friends. She is a skeptic. I love picking on her, especially when she's not on the phone. I'll pay for this because she's also my pay foreman. What do we have that would interest a skeptic?
What do we have that would interest the skeptic?
Perhaps being singled out with Chip Coffee in the gallery reading?
You know, yeah. I believe that that would probably be one. I believe that anybody that's a skeptic is definitely going to want to get into these panels. You know, whether it's Eric Altman or Ken Gerhardt, who's coming, both phenomenal cryptozoologist. You know, Eric Altman's a huge, huge Bigfoot, you know, researcher, has done some phenomenal work. Ken Gerhardt, you've seen him on Monster Quest. Amazing, educated man in cryptozoology. Traveled the world. Some of those things would be a good panel to go to. You know, we're going to have... We're going to have some panels that I think are going to definitely interest the skeptic. And I'll tell you what, even if it doesn't convince a skeptic that there's stuff out there, it'll definitely open up a skeptic's mind to more of a personal and scientific level of the possibility. You know what I mean? You know, this event is not designed to make believers or, you know, prove or disprove anybody's one theory. You know, this event is put on as a culmination of scientists. You know, we have Dave Roundtree coming. He's going to be doing a lot of work, going to be talking about all kinds of stuff that I don't even know about. You know, gamma radiation, wormhole theory. You know, there's going to be a huge, I mean, we have authors coming who have written countless books and can talk on behalf of personal experiences. You know, we have just so much. I mean, it's hard to even remember everything. So, yeah, I think that as a skeptic, there's going to be plenty of things. I would say that what a skeptic should do at this point is go onto the website, look over the schedule of all the days, and see something that they believe or do not believe, and then sit down on that panel, because they're going to have the opportunity to ask questions to the specialists and the people that are in the field. And usually that helps a lot for a skeptic to either get answers or, you know, possibly, you know, open that door of opportunity, if you will.
But you what the hell did
fall off your chair, Matt?
Oh, No, I was there. You asked the question. I was waiting for you to respond. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, my response is, well, simply, I love Terry to death. And it just still baffles me with everything that I've seen, everything that I've heard, how she can still be a skeptic. But the simple fact that there's so much there, I mean, one of her comments in the room is, I believe more in Bigfoot than ghosts. Scott, I explained this to her, well, actually, I explained this about her, Monday night, Matt, or maybe last week. Unless a spirit actually walks up, bitch slaps her and goes, yo, bitch, I'm here, now what? She's still going to go, I'm just not buying it.
But you know what? That's good. I'm glad she's there. Because you know what? The driving force behind people like us who have had encounters and have been doing, you know, paranormal investigating for years, who sit in a room where nothing happens, there's nobody in the home, you go home a couple hours later, start reviewing your EVPs, and you hear people talking. You know, we've experienced it. We know it. If it wasn't for the skeptics out there who don't believe any of it, we'd have no reason to continue to do it. I mean, at least that's what I would feel, because we know it.
That's
and
true.
It's the people that have no belief in it or have no faith or don't think it exists. That's why people continuously drive forward. You know, when you become passionate about something, and I don't care if it's Harley versus, you know, a Honda CBR, or Hayabusa, or, you know, whatever your passion is, you want to express that and share that with somebody. So for us having experiences and then having somebody say it don't really exist, that gives us even more of a driving force to get to the bottom of it, to get to the truth, to find a way to prove the existence, you know, of the spirit world to people who don't believe in the spirit world. So I love skeptics. I love them. And, you know, I'd rather take a skeptic on an investigation than a seasoned veteran, because they already know what to expect. You know, the non-believers are the ones that I'm looking to disprove and to kind of get on board with us and say, hey, listen, there is something out there. What it is, we're still trying to figure it out. But me and you were in that room. Neither one of us were talking, but somebody was. You know what I mean? Or nobody was in the house, and that door did open and close, and that chair slid across the room. You know, none of us did that. You know, you were there. You saw it, you know. So I love it. I love skeptics.
And, I mean, the whole reason that I got into it wasn't because I was skeptical. You know, even as a small child, I had, I was 7 when my grandfather passed away, and I'm convinced that he came to me and told me goodbye. And after that, it has become not a quest to find out how. It's been a quest to become what if and what's after. You know, I realized that, you know, back in the early 1900s, they had an experiment showing, you know, when a human passes, and their body is on a scale. 7/10 of an ounce or 7/10 of a pound left the human body the instant the body stopped. All right, well, that's got to be your spirit. I can accept that. That's all. I'm all well and good with that. It doesn't all just become dark and I become worm food. There's got to be something else there. And that's been my goal, is to be, you know, find out what the hell is there. If that 7/10 of a pound leaves my body and it is my spirit, where the hell does it go? You know, and what the hell is on the other side? I mean, it's been the quest of man from the dawn of time you know, from the dawn of time that we can figure out anyway, as far back as cavemen, where they carved effigies in the cave walls. We knew that they had deities. You know, these were the gods of this and the gods of that, and blah, blah, blah. Well, how the hell do you become one of these gods? And when I pass, when I die, and my mortal physical body no longer functions, what's after that? And that's what started me doing paranormal investigations. I want to ask, you know, part of my team's standard protocol is, you ask, can you tell me what it's like on the other side? Can you feel heat? Can you feel cold? You know, things like that. Those are, I mean, those are valid questions that I want to know. When I die, you know, I don't want to believe that it all just becomes dark and I'm worm food. So skeptics like Terry, I love you to death, sweetheart. I truly do. But people with your mindset are what push me to continue to do what I do. So you're definitely right, Scott.
I know we're all going to find out at some point, but it would be nice to know if we had a little idea beforehand, you know. And maybe the fact is we're not supposed to know, you know. Maybe the fact is, you know, it's not something that we're ever going to get the answer to, you know. Who knows? That's what keeps us going, you know. And you know, I'm very much looking forward to the afterlife. As weird as that sounds, you know, when you spend so many years, you know, looking for it. I mean, you know, it's going to be almost like a closure, if you will. You know what I mean? You're going to get there and be like, ah, we were totally looking in the wrong direction. You know what I mean? Like, it's interesting. It really is. It's an exciting time to be in the paranormal field. You know, there's a huge advancement in technology. Every day we turn around, people are coming out with new equipment, more scientific data is being collected. You know, it's a good time, you know. I think it's the right time. And I think as we progress over the next, you know, 10 to 15 years, I think a lot more things are going to be discovered. I think that a lot more truths that might be governmentally hidden from the general public are going to come out. Now, I'm not going to touch. That's a whole other interview.
That one's definitely a different radio program.
You know what I mean? but I do believe that, you know, over the next, you know, decade or so, I think a lot more stuff's going to start, you know, people are going to have to start waking up and realizing that there are other things out there that A, have either been hidden and sheltered from the general public, or have been in existence for all this time, and they're going to have to admit to it. You know what I mean? They're going to have to come clean and be like, all right, you weirdos wearing aluminum hats, you know, aluminum foil hats were right all these years. Something's going to happen, and you know, I feel it coming, and I just hope and pray that, you know, we aren't all wrong. You know, I don't think we are. I think we're touching on a lot of things that, you know, I don't know. It's just a good time to be an investigator. That's all I can tell you.
Well,
you know,
go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a while since I've gotten to say something.
Then say something worthwhile.
No, and wait, do I ever? But besides that,
today.
No, when it comes down to it, Scott, though, like, honestly, I agree with you. It's for sure a good time to be an investigator. everything in this field comes in waves as far as acceptance. Is if you look from the 50s, and it goes back farther. I mean, I can go into ancient Egyptian times, but no, it's it comes in waves. I mean, in the 80s, you had movies like Ghostbusters, which, you know, kind of brought it a little more in the forefront. And people were doing research and going on investigations, stuff like that. It died down in the 90s and earlier 2000s, like 2000, 2001. And then Ghost Hunters came out and kind of brought it back in the forefront. Well, for where the industry sits now is, yeah, it's in the public eye. People know about it. They're more open to talk about it instead of take you away with the warm, cozy white coat to where you hug yourself and you love everything about yourself. And you bob your head against a pretty much a wire fence. Well, with the acceptance, I think is right now with the way the technology is and everything, I think it's a huge doorbuster to where people can actually go out and actively do it as long as they have the correct purpose, they should. Other than that, I mean, it's the opportunity is there, the equipment is there, everything is pretty much there. It's just, you know, something to where we need to do it in a respectful manner.
Correct. Well, you know, with that being said, I mean, you take Mark and Debbie Constantino. They are actually putting on a ghost hunt at a notoriously haunted location in Bethlehem on Friday night and Saturday night during Parafest. They're doing two hunts a night. I'll tell you something. I've investigated with them already, and those people, I don't know how they do it, but they can get EVPs anywhere. They have some connection with the spirit world where they just want to talk to Mark and Debbie, you know. So it's neat to see how certain people are able to communicate and connect on the spirit level more so than other people. That's why I'm excited about having, you know, them do investigations with the general public, which, mind you, sold out pretty quick. So if you didn't get a ticket for the ghost hunt, unfortunately, there aren't any left. But, you know, to take general public, and I'm sure, without a shadow of a doubt, out of those people, there's got to be at least a handful of skeptics. You know, will they be willing to admit that an EVP is a voice from somewhere else? You know, is that the kind of thing where, with Mark and Debbie's capability of gathering voices from the other side almost whenever they want to, is that going to be enough to prove to somebody who doesn't believe they exist that there is the possibility? I don't want them to come away from this and say, I'm a true 100% believer. I'm going to go over to Gary Golka's desk and I'm going to buy a K2 and I'm going to start investigating. No, I just want people to be open to the fact that there is the possibility of other stuff.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, we got about a minute left. So, yeah, Parafest 2013 is going on in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 6th, 7th, and 8th of September. If you want to throw anything out, but that continues, it's just live right now, is the plug. So if you got something in 45 seconds, throw it out there, whatever you want to throw out.
All right. Buy your tickets online at Ticketmaster and or the website www.parafest2013.com. Get your tickets now. They are selling quick.
Yes, they are, and I guarantee you it will be worth whatever the hell you want to spend. It doesn't matter what it is. There's so much going on that general admission to VIP is phenomenal. So, again, it's going to continue, but thank you, Scott. Thank you, Dennis. It has been a phenomenal 2 hours, which feels like 10 minutes. Definitely appreciate it. Check us out at Live from ParaFest. And times and dates will be posted. I just am working on when we're going to do it. So, but yes, thank you guys. Awesome, awesome show. It's still going, like I said, archived. So we can pretty much put out of the fuck, dick, shit, farce, whatever you want to right now.
Really?
Well, I'll leave that up to you because you're the one that has the overcompensating problem.
Yeah, I know. Small penis syndrome.
See, I had to hold that one all the way to the very end. Thank you, Matt. Thank you for approving, you know, burp, burp, shits, and whatever else.
I never said burps, asshole.
Dude, I hope you're not pissed I brought the whole boat thing up. I just thought that was hilarious.
No, no, dude, and you know what? It is what it is. Like, seriously, that's... There is no offense ever taken whatsoever when it comes to our show. And me personally, I never take offense to anything. You want to poke fun at whatever you
know
want to poke fun at? Fine. I'm that person to where just happy-go-lucky, whatever.
I was so impressed when you told me how big your boat was. I was like, God damn. I know those things ain't cheap. You know what I mean? And then when you started rattling off everything else, I was like, son of a bitch, I need to work where that guy works. Do you know what I mean? I was like, wow.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean, never mind. I can't even be that crude. I can't. I refuse to.
No, just do it.
Oh, then buy knee pads, Scott. You can probably have a job where he does.
Jeez. Yeah, but I'm not moving to Chicago because I ain't giving up my guns.
Oh,
well,
see,
that's in the works also.
That cracks me the hell up because Matt and I were just on the phone about this today. The state of Virginia, I can blatant carry, like on a holster, on my side, like Old West.
Hmm?
Virginia is, well... I wish the hell they would put the stand your ground rules into effect. But then again, I think you have too many dumbasses that wouldn't research the law and actually understand what it means. Like today, I met with a detective, went to the pawn shop to go look at what was supposed to be or what is believed to be my possessions that were stolen last weekend. I walk into the pawn shop. I've got my 40 cal NP on my side, holster, blatant carry. Not a damn thing said. No big deal. It's perfectly legal. Nobody can say jack shit about it. In Chicago, you can't even own this son of a bitch, as far as I know. So, let's see.
Well,
I'd
find funny. 10 days to draft the law. 10 days,
well,
that's it.
Hey, stand by, I want to say something real quick. Terry, if you can still hear me, go ahead and call in. You can punch into the switchboard and you can listen to the remainder of the show through the switchboard.
She can't hear you.
Well, if you can't hear me, then don't message me.
One of the things funny about Chicago is there's certain areas where guns are outlawed, but yet they have the highest amount of death by firearms, which just goes to show it's easy for a criminal to get a gun, and the criminals aren't the problem. And, you know, the other thing is any law-abiding citizen who is buying a gun for the right reasons don't give a shit if you have to wait 5 days, 10 days, or 20 days to pick up your gun. It's only the people that you got to worry about that are complaining about this stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like I feel we should have to wait to buy a gun because it's our right to own a gun. But I also know that there's a lot of people out there who should not have one. You know, they should not. They shouldn't be allowed to tie their own shoes, let alone own a firearm. And as long as they've never been convicted of a crime, you pretty much got a free pass to get one.
Right.
So, you know, it's just well, it's a catch 22.
Well, now, I have my father was law enforcement. I have absolutely nothing that can stop me from owning a weapon. I have the right to carry concealed in the state of Virginia. I don't want to wait 5 days. Why? Because it's an inconvenience to me. And we're such a country of, I don't want to be inconvenienced. I want what I want, and I want it now. So you have all these little bleeding heart pansy asses that raise holy hell because of that. Well, here's the deal. If you don't want to wait 5 days and you want the system to give you 2-hour approval, then fine. When Jack Dick up the road gets a weapon that shouldn't have a weapon, don't bitch. Because
right.
People
right.
like you screwed this up.
Yep. But they'd never admit to it, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, it just pisses me off. And Matt, I'm going to bounce in and out for a moment, and I'm going to conference Terry in so she can hear the remainder of the show.
Probably fine.
She can't even call in and listen from the switchboard. So I'll be in and out. Gentlemen, I'll be right back with you.
Yeah. No, Scott, when it comes down to the firearm stuff, I mean, Illinois
right.
is what, the last state that doesn't have any sort of laws?
Right.
I believe we're last or second to last.
Yeah, I don't remember which one they are.
And when you have the highest crime rate, it's bullshit. It's like, you know, it's taking away people being able to defend themselves. And
exactly.
All the bullshit that comes out of that is only from two neighborhoods in the city. Like,
right.
Every single shooting that you hear is from two neighborhoods. My personal opinion.
All right, gentlemen, I'm back.
God damn it.
Yeah, I know.
No,
you were talking about me. You'll get
no,
out.
No, we're actually not.
About,
it's not always
we're talking about
you.
Yeah. You can see it.
Oh, that's right. I'm not the one with the big boat.
No,
wow.
And I mean, a lot of it comes from just two neighborhoods which are gang-ridden and low-income or no-income and all that stuff. And not the citizens that are there, but you want to take, you know, if you want control of the problem, let the people fucking defend themselves. Like, seriously. I mean, me personally, living in Naperville, Illinois, which is the highest, if or the second highest, if not the highest, school district in the country. Just, you know, I don't need to carry a weapon. I don't have to. But if I drive 23 miles away, yeah, I need to be armed.
Well,
now,
there's nothing
I had to go work. I had to go work in the hood today. Briefly, but, I mean, when I say in the hood, I mean it's notorious amongst the local law enforcement for drug use, trafficking, you know, the lower, oh, hell, I'm not known for being politically correct, and I'm not running for office, so I don't give a shit. The lower dregs of our society. I will carry my damn weapon in that neighborhood. And last summer, I was working in that same exact neighborhood at the same exact block. I had, at that time, a Glock 23 on my hip. I had a 11, maybe 12-year-old kid. Now, I have a Serpa holster, which is the finger release, black Kydex holster, whatever, you know, describe it however you want. It's blatant. This little 11 or 12-year-old kid walks by me and goes, oh, wow, I got the same exact gun, and lifted up his shirt, and sure as shit, tucked into his belt line was a Glock 23.
That's awesome.
What the hell is an 11 or 12-year-old kid doing with a gun? No law in any state in the entire continental or offshore provinces of the United States is a 11 or 12-year-old kid allowed to carry a concealed weapon. But that's the kind of shit neighborhoods that we are starting to get, and that's the kind of shit that is happening. And if it, well, over the last 7 years, that I've been in business, I have had to draw 5 or 6 times, aim my weapon at another human being to either A, prevent myself from being mugged or shot. And they're not all in shit neighborhoods.
Right, right.
So, I mean, if you put me somewhere like Chicago or Naperville, where I couldn't carry a weapon, I'd pack my shit and move out. I, you know, if that whole place turned into a ghost town, I would give a rat's ass less, because I'm not allowed as a citizen. I don't have the right to defend myself. To me, that's just bullshit. I think our Second Amendment spelled that out pretty damn clear.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. And that just left the whole crowd in silence. Holy hell.
My response is,
own shooting.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't condone anybody killing anybody. But you know what? Somewhere along the lines, somebody screwed that up. You know what I mean? Somebody lost faith in the fact that you're supposed to respect life, you know, and with that being said, you have to adapt, you know, and I value my life.
Yeah.
I value my family's life. And if that's going to require me to carry for their safety as well as my own, well, I didn't make that decision. I didn't make that decision to have to lock my doors at night or to lock my truck. You know, I didn't make that decision to be a negative person. You know, I'm only following suit with what I have to. You know, and that's what people seem to lose sight of. We didn't cause this problem. Guns have been around for thousands of years. Well, no, not thousands, but you know what I'm saying, hundreds of years. And not one gun ever killed anybody. And, you know, that's the thing. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people have been killed over years, not even by firearms. I mean, there are multiple ways that people can kill each other. But for some reason, they just seem to point out the guns, you know, and understandably, it's the easiest way to do massive killings. But we didn't start that. We didn't choose to misuse the gun. We didn't choose to do that. All we're trying to do as citizens is be protected, to even the playing field, if you will, you know? And that's what bothers me the most. I mean, I don't know. That's just me.
Well, Scott, I'm not sure how old you are, but I'll take a rough guess. You remember a TV program that was on back in the 70s called All in the Family with this old crotchety bastard named Archie Bunker?
He is my hero.
I absolutely loved Archie Bunker. And I can't remember the daughter's name on the show, but I remember her bitching about how many people were shot and killed. And I remember his response to it was, well, would it make you feel better, little girly, if they was thrown out of bedroom windows?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care
Archie
if you give them
awesome.
A hammer.
That's right.
Anybody that has that evil intent to take a life will find a way to do it. Which, by the
way,
if you guys, if you guys just heard a huge commotion a moment ago, I do apologize, and I apologize to the listeners. I have my little sister's dog, Radar, staying with us. She has a surgery coming up tomorrow, so we are dog-sitting Radar. So he's a little excitable because he's around an all-new pack, but he's having a blast. So, anyway, yeah, Gloria. Very good, Terry. Thank you.
Yes, her name was
so
Gloria.
What
is your question, Scott? It was Sally Struthers.
Yes, it was.
Exactly. So what is your question, Scott?
Well, no, what I was going to say was, did they outlaw the hatchet after Lizzie Borden hamburgerized her parents? No.
No,
because they knew that was an isolated incident.
Well,
it's
they
just,
also haven't. I mean, I still carry a knife today, and what was the weapon of choice, so to speak, for BTK? What was the weapon of choice for H.H. Holmes? What was the weapon of choice for, you know, I mean, we can name thousands of them. How many people die every year from, you know, stupidity and gravity? I haven't seen them try to outlaw gravity.
Right.
It just, no matter what you want to blame it on, it's people's own inner demons that lead to somebody else losing their life from that individual's poor choices. I don't care
right.
what weapon they use. I mean, if I beat your damn skull in with a rock, are we going to outlaw rocks? No. Why? Well, it's retarded. And
wow.
just, I feel the same way with firearms. You know, I carry mine to defend myself. I have used it to defend a cashier's life in a carryout. I happen to be on the way, which ironically, I was on the way home from the shooting range. I had gone and put 200 rounds downrange, got my weapon on my side. I'm in the back of the store behind the big lotto machines, you know, the big vending machine lottery thing. And all I hear is, empty the fucking register, bitch. Like, oh, no, he didn't. I poked my head around, and sure enough, he did. He's standing there with both arms straight out and a firearm in his hand, pointed at the cashier. Well, you know, I'm not law enforcement, but I did what had to be done. I dropped one knee, I poked around the corner, I leveled my weapon at him, and I said, drop the weapon, drop the weapon, get on the ground now. I won't mention what his words were, but they were along the lines of referencing defecation, and he turned and hauled ass out the door. Left a beautiful face print on the glass, by the way. I'm talking cheeks, nose, chin, forehead, because he hit that glass door like there was no tomorrow. And had he spun and pointed his weapon at me, there wouldn't have been a tomorrow. But had I not been there, one, he may have killed that cashier. Two, he most certainly would have robbed the location. Now, I realize that, you know, insurance makes up for that and blah, blah, blah. But here I am, a week after having all of my tools stolen, I can't make a living, and I'm still fighting my insurance company to get paid, you know, would it have closed that business down, which would have in turn taken, I don't know, they probably only had 8 or 10 employees, but, you know, would it have put them out of work? So,
see, what Dennis failed to tell you is that, yeah, he may have cited on the assailant, but at the same time, his grouping is about 47 inches apart. So,
no.
He doesn't have a, you know, 1 or 1.2 or 1.4. No, he kind of goes the ghetto style and just closes his eyes and pulls the trigger.
No. I have to argue that. I have a 3/4 inch on the first two taps, and the third tap is about 3 inches higher. By the way, I'm trained in triple tap. That's what I practice most on. So I run about 3/4 inches between the first two taps, and the third tap hits about 3 to 4 inches higher, which coincidentally, as the body drops, usually ends up about mid-forehead. So, yeah. I don't ever want to test that theory on a live person. I mean, I was an EMT for quite a while. My job was to save lives. I don't ever, ever want to take one. But if I have an option of they go home or I go home, guess which one of us is breaking bread with family that night?
The guy with the better grouping?
Something like that. And I think that should be every citizen's right. I mean, if you're doing something wrong, and I'm not, why should I be the one to not be able to go home to my family? I mean, I have no problem with taking a human life if it is in the interest of saving my own or somebody else. I mean, I don't know what that other person has in their life. For all I know, they have, you know, 3 crippled, handicapped kids at home that they're just out working their ass off to try to take care of them. And here comes, you know, little Mr. Joe Crackpipe in that can take their life. That's why I have a big issue with Chicago not allowing anybody to carry a gun. The old saying, when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. And it's showing itself true to form in Chicago. Now, Scott, what town or locality are you in?
We're in Pennsylvania, about an hour north of Philly and an hour south of the Poconos.
And what's the carry laws there?
What's that?
What are the carry laws there? What are the gun laws there?
You have to apply for a license, and then you can have a concealed.
Well,
okay,
in relation to where Parafest is, you're not that far away, right?
Nope. No, it takes me about 15 minutes to get there.
All right, so I'm gonna hop back into that real quick instead of the bullshit government carry conceal laws, which we all know sucks. I mean, let's be honest. We're all in agreement. What was the number one thing in Bethlehem or Allentown or anything that just made you want to bring Parafest to that area besides Was it lack of recognition, or what was the main focus?
Well, I think the main focus when choosing Bethlehem was the fact that the Sands was there. When I had first decided to do Parafest at the Sands, or at least approach the Sands with the opportunity to have it there, I knew that Bethlehem was a notoriously haunted town. They have notoriously haunted locations within walking distance from the Sands. But also, Bethlehem has always had different festivals. They have Music Fest, which is the largest free outdoor concert ever. They get in excess of 1 million people over a week period of time, which has been going successfully for, in excess of 15 years. And Bethlehem's Music Fest has always been like the area's go-to place during, it happened to end on Sunday, but it's always about the same time. And they also have Celtic Fest, which is a gathering of people that do Highland games. They have people that actually come from Scotland who perform, like the caber toss and the stone toss, and they also have bagpipe competitions, and they have Oktoberfest, which is the beer fest, and it's all in that general area. And I wanted to bring a different twist to the fests that they have there. And they seem to have a fest for everything except, what we're into. So it kind of almost felt right to put it there. There was enough reasons for me to put it there, that it felt right.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Chicago is a pain in the ass, like, in comparison to where there's little to no recognition of anything that has to do with paranormal activity whatsoever.
Yeah, but you got some really good locations out there.
Yeah, but you can't get into them. That's the problem. Like, even with, Ursula Bielski and, the names that we've talked about before, it's the instantaneous response is no, 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 no. Like, oh, we don't want that attraction. We don't want that, anything. We don't want that association.
Right, right.
So it's instantly no. So it's like, yeah, cool. You go to places, you check out places. I mean, there are certain places, like one's called the Great Escape, and not the, go and buy a new trampoline or anything like that. Great Escape is a restaurant which is on the kind of northwest side of Chicago. And the owner is extremely welcoming. He lives upstairs. Like, there's an apartment upstairs and the restaurant's downstairs. And he's like, yeah, come in pretty much whenever you want. But he doesn't want his stuff publicized. He's like, use it for your own knowledge and advancement, but just don't put it out there as, oh, I got this at this place. But if you Google the Great Escape in Chicago, which is more by the airport, not downtown, it comes up as, oh, there's hauntings and this, that, and the other thing with the spirits and ghosts and all that stuff. Like, well, why? Obviously, it's out there. Why wouldn't you just accept it? I was talking to Brian. Go ahead.
I think it's Well, our government in general, for years, has refused to accept the fact that anything paranormal exists. And it trickles down from our federal government to our localities. You know, Area 51, oh, it doesn't exist. UFOs, oh, no, they don't exist. You know, all of that. And it just trickles down. They're afraid that it will give a bad connotation to the area. That's my thought on it.
I know specifically in this area, I'm 2 hours from Gettysburg, about two and a half hours from Gettysburg. I've been there many, many, many times. There's a place down there called the Cashtown Inn. The Cashtown Inn is a haunted location. It was haunted for many years. But once Taps aired their episode of the Cashtown Inn, they went from being able to go there and get a room to not being able to get a room for almost a year. That's how often the rooms are booked out. So there are many businesses who have tasted the success of advertising a haunted location. Now, whether or not it increases business or gets rid of business, you know, turns business away, it doesn't appear that at this point in society, with the popularity of paranormal shows on TV, you know, My Ghost Story, you know, Celebrity Ghost Story. I mean, all these shows are showing that people are coming forward and they don't have to be ashamed of it anymore. So it's piqued the interest and curiosity of a lot of non-believers who want to go to these restaurants to see if anything happens because they don't believe it. So what they'll do is they'll go to this restaurant and they'll eat and nothing will happen. And then they'll be like, oh, there are no ghosts. And that place is a great place to eat. I'm going to keep going there. But one of these days they're going to see something, you know, but it keeps people coming back. It keeps the regulars coming back. It keeps, you know, people who are curious to come back. So I think that advertising that your place has spirits and not just the ones behind the bar, I think could actually benefit a lot of businesses because I've seen it happen to locations even in my own area.
I will 1,000% agree with that. And there are places who embrace it and advertise it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's going to cancel out anybody from the community that just, you know, like, for example, if it's been a up and running place for a long period of time, they're still going to go there no matter what, because it's a local watering hole, it's a local, you know, great place to eat, something like that, like, awesome, cool. But it does bring in a new element as far as, but I hate to use this term, but it really is honestly pretty accurate if you take a step back and look at it, is the paranormal ghost hunter fad. I mean, now that it's more of a household name, now that it's more of a household event, there seems to be a lot more people coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, yeah, no, I have activity. Like, well, what kind of activity do you actually have? Is it something you're mentally manifesting, or is it something that is actually truly going on in your house? Oh, well, I watch the shows once or twice. Well, that doesn't mean that there's shit going on. You watch the shows once or twice. It's probably something that you hear a creak in a house settling, and automatically your house is haunted. You know, there's just, I appreciate the media for what they've done in making it more accepting for us, but at the same time, it's like, well, it has also created some BSCs, which BSCs is batshit crazy people. that really have nothing going on at all, but they just don't know how to decipher that because they watch Ghost Hunters or Ghost Adventures or Paranormal State or something.
So, no matter what you think of the shows that are on air, I've got to give them kudos in one thing. 5 years ago, Joe Bob didn't know jack shit about what an EVP was. Joe Bob didn't know jack shit about what a paranormal investigator did. Now they have an idea. It doesn't mean they have to grasp it right off the bat. It doesn't mean they have to accept it, but they have an idea what it is. So the shows that are on have done that. I think Ghost Lab back with the
Kling Brothers.
I'm pretty certain the Kling Brothers were one of the first programs that came out, and we've had them on air with us. I'm not sure who was ahead of them, but I think they started this whole thing as far as the TV. And
no,
you know,
the first was Ryan Buell and Paranormal State. They were the first ones to ever be on air in a documentary. And also right around that exact same time was Ghost Hunters.
Well, okay. Maybe. I mean, I can't testify to who did what first, but I've got to give them kudos for being pioneers in a field that we've done. Now, Scott, I can't speak for you because I don't know how long you've been out here doing this shit. I've got almost 10 years doing this, and, you know, I've known there was something from the time I was 7 years old, which gives me 25 plus years, and I won't tell my age because a woman never tells.
Scott, there's a lot of plus in there.
Well.
But I think it's awesome that, you know, they have brought what we do kind of to the forefront. And it's a shitload more accepted. You know, I mean, 5 years ago, if you wore a, you know, paranormal investigator hat, people would look at you like, oh my God, he's probably like doing witchcraft or voodoo or, you know, some black magic shit. And I'll bet he's got a pincushion doll with my face on it. No. But the shows have brought it more to the forefront and made it more publicly acceptable. Do you agree?
Well, you know, here's the way I look at it. The way I look at it is this. Had it not been for those shows bringing ghosts to the general public, we wouldn't be able to help people. And the reason I say that is the groups that were available before it became mainstream were so far in between, and it was so taboo to talk about it, that people that were having problems probably didn't get the help they needed. You know, I look at the people like the Prawns, you know, from the movie that just came out, The Conjuring. I mean, those people, you look at Bill Bean, who lived through that, all that hellacious crap those families had to go through. If it wasn't for these TV shows bringing the popularity out, everybody that was having problems like that would still have nobody to talk to. Because it's not like Lorraine and her husband had an ad in the morning call, you know, in the local newspaper. It says, hey, if you're getting picked up and thrown around your bedroom at night, call us, we can help. Because you didn't do that, you know? And I think that with the TV shows, more so than giving us the opportunity to not be ashamed of what we look for in the dark, I think it's more a help to the society that now they have avenues to reach out to. They have people they can call and talk to. We are now talking about, you know, people who specialize in demonology, the Johnsons. I mean, you know, the Warrens. I mean, you know, the Bill Beans. You know, and all these people who now have opened themselves up, expressed their love for that particular side of life, and given the opportunity to people to now have a venue, now have an escape, or at least a support group. And I look at it that way more so than anything, because I don't have any problems with that. You know, I don't get picked up, scratched, thrown around, nothing like that. And I'm thankful for it, because I don't really think I'd want to go through that. But that doesn't mean I don't want to help somebody that might have that problem, you know. So I'm thankful for the groups that made it on TV and made it possible for others like us to help people with issues.
And made it mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
It's now,
absolutely.
5 years ago, would you have ever imagined this being mainstream?
No. That's why I'm saying over the next 10 to 15 years, something's going to happen. You know, something's going to break. We're going to have, we're not going to be looked down upon anymore. I think that something's really going to happen. I don't know if Bigfoot's going to walk into Walmart. I don't know if Loch Ness Monster is going to, you know, get breached on shore. I don't know if the aliens are going to, you know, come down and, you know, run for president. Oh, wait, they already did that.
Yeah, I was going to say it's too late.
Yeah, okay. But no, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know what's going to happen, but something's going to happen. You know, we're too close. We're at a very pinnacle point, and I really think that something's going to happen in the very near future, hopefully within my lifetime, that people can say, that's what's going on, or, wow, that really is happening, you know, and I just think that, like I said, it's an exciting time, you know, and I'm excited about getting in there and getting into the thick of it and just continuing to do what we do and be able to help people. It's a very comforting feeling to know that something that traumatic, something that traumatic for a family, I can help with. You know what I mean? And if it is so bad and so dark and evil and nasty that I can't help, I can reach out to somebody because I do know people that can handle that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a chain, you know. We're no stronger than the link in front and behind us, you know? And that's what's exciting about this time.
And, I mean, we've got guys like David Roundtree who are doing every scientific aspect they can possibly think of. And, I mean, he has a wonderful scientific mind. And, you know, with all the new gear and gadgetry and everything that he's coming up with, we're bound to make a huge discovery.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And guys like him with minds like his, it's bound to happen. And I don't know if that'll
Absolutely.
Be 10 years. I'm thinking within the next 5 years, we will make a huge leap in this entire field. I mean, look how far we've come already in the past 5 years, where we have,
mm-hmm.
you know, Gary Golka and all the equipment that he's made with the Melmeter and the, you know, just everything that he's done, the spirit box, and how we're starting to understand the white noise aspect of how they communicate with us just in
Correct.
The past 5 years.
Sure.
You know,
the nice thing about it is these guys are getting smarter. And you know what? There's guys out there that are, they're younger, equally as intelligent, and they're bringing different thought processes to the scientific world. You know, they have a younger mind. They're looking at things a little differently, and they're able to collaborate with guys like David Roundtree, and they're able to, communicate with people in other countries that have a different view on it. You know, it's it's one of them things where I think, you know, it was funny. I was on another radio show Monday night, and we had talked about the uniformity of some type of a board, almost like an NHRA, if you will, for the paranormal community. And, you know, it brought up some interesting points. I mean, they were talking about, you know, charging for investigations, which is like a taboo subject. They were talking about trying to get down a set of bylaws where, you know, who would even be called to hold such a position, to be on a board of writing a set of bylaws for paranormal investigating. But, you know, it brings up an interesting thought. At some point, something's going to have to happen. Someone's going to have to take the helm, put their foot down, and say, listen, I've been doing this for 25 years. I've experienced many things over the years. This is how I got the action or the reaction from the spirits that I want, or how we got them. So if you get enough guys together with enough experience and enough knowledge, and I'm not talking just about guys that go out with flashlights and ask questions. I'm talking about people like the David Roundtrees, who you can't tell an orb is an orb because he don't believe it. You know what I mean? David is a scientific man, and unless he can catch that orb that's emanating its own light and its own magnetic frequency, and he can record it with data, it's not an orb. You know what I mean? That's how hardcore he is. But I want to be able to understand from all walks of life. I'm talking about bringing in the leader of the Satanic Church and the demon possessions. I want to bring in, you know, Bishop Long and the entire cathedral, the Catholic Church's demonic school. You know what I mean? I want to bring them all together and have one big battle royal until we can come up with some kind of a process that would initiate some type of laws that not every Tom, Dick, and Harry can just grab, you know, your local Olympus voice recorder from your Home Depot or your Office Max and go out and start doing investigating. And I think that day is coming. I think it's going to happen because there are so many black shirts out there. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think they're doing bad, and I don't think they're out for the wrong reasons. But there again, not everybody should own a gun. Not everybody should be doing paranormal investigating. You know what I mean?
Well, and Scott, we've had this conversation actually not that long ago. And, yeah, you know, I think it is one of those things to where somebody watches the show and they're like, oh, well, that seems kind of cool. They get into it and develop theories and ideas, which are awesome, but if you do it in the not correct manner and you try and look at yourself as like a prima donna and all that shit, like, no. I mean, it just doesn't happen. Yeah,
right.
There is some sort of I wouldn't call it a revolution, but a revelation that is on the horizon. I would definitely agree with that. But it's who's going to present it? Is it going to be somebody like a David Roundtree, or is it going to be somebody who is just completely outside of the box that, like, nothing, no conformity whatsoever, just like a rebel, if you will, that will come out and say, hey, no, you're going about this all wrong. This is what I got.
Well, that's why I said, you know, it's almost to the point where we're going to need a conference. You know, we're going to have to start, you know, having a conference where people who want this field to advance and are willing to come and talk about it on their own dime. The general public is not allowed. You get, you know, an invite only, you know, and they cue in on a lot of things that are going on. I mean, I think that it's going to happen. It almost has to. This field is getting so big, and there's so many variables that we have to include everybody into a conference, you know. take a few select people, you know? Like, I work for a company that's a corporation, and once every 3 months, every quarter, they have a manager's meeting to discuss the new things coming out and to talk about what was wrong the year before and what we can do to make it better, you know, on the store level. So with all big corporations and companies, they delegate general rules of activity, you know, and general procedure rules. And, you know, just like something as simple as, you know, formatting a standard level of questions, you know, a printed sheet that has, you know, specific questions, or a way to file your information that is made available to the board, you know, to make sure that during the EVP you weren't ruffling through some lady's drawer looking for her, you know, Saturday night friend, you know, I mean, anything. And, you know, to be able to regulate this stuff. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I could see why it's important, because once we start getting bigger, which, you know, it's, we are big, there's got to be some kind of law, you know, and there's got to be some rules. There's got to be some accountability, if you will, because right now we're flying by the seat of our pants. I mean, we're under no regulations, and I'm not saying I want it regulated, because that means the government can put their hand out. So don't get me wrong there, but I'm talking about a group of people that could sit down and discuss everything from what is the, you know, what cameras work the best, which ones are, you know, everything from I mean, just the whole nine. I mean, think of all the stuff that we have to keep track of during an investigation. Think about all the things that have to go on, all the evidence that has to get reviewed, the liabilities we have to worry about, you know, and it's just, I think that at some point we're going to have to get everybody together, or a few select people, and try to sit down and come up with an idea or a way to make sure that people aren't ruining our industry.
Well,
yeah,
even NASA.
Hold on, Dennis, real quick. I would definitely agree with that, except for the fact that the, like, when it comes down to camaraderie and, you know, all that kind of shit in the field, there really, truly isn't all that much to where if somebody's on the board of that selection, there's going to be 900 people who hate them. And it doesn't matter who you have. So the way that I see it is, it really honestly is going to be a lack of support. I agree with the concept. I just don't think the execution would be easy in any way whatsoever. I don't know if I'm out of line by the silence, or...
Well, I... No matter who you put on, like, so let's take a hypothetical. We call it the Council of Paranormal Investigations. You're
no,
right.
Fuck that.
No,
it's
matter,
called paranormal government representatives.
PGR. No. No, I don't like it. It doesn't have a smooth flow. I don't give a rat's ass if you call it, you know, Ghost Hunting Motherfuckers United. It doesn't matter.
Right.
No matter who gets appointed to that council, yes, you're going to have a buttload of people that don't like any one individual. And if you have 10 people on that council, you're going to have a buttload of people that don't like all 10 of them. Who gives a rat's ass? Here's the issue, and this is what I was starting to say. Even NASA, at its inception, where they said, we will put a man on the moon, the majority of the United States citizens said, that's bullshit. We can't put a man on the moon. That You realize that's 93 million miles away? It can't be done. We'll kill them. Well, now we have an option on something totally different that is earthbound, but unaccepted by most people. Most people, and, you know, I keep mentioning Terry because she's the biggest skeptic I know. Most people hold her opinion. They don't believe in ghosts. They don't believe in spirits. They don't believe in energy or life after death. So no matter what panel you put together, no matter how strong they are, no matter how intelligent they are, they can be, you know, geniuses based on a 145 IQ ratio, get you into Mensa. We can put an entire panel of 20-some bitches together that all have 200-plus IQ, and there's still going to be people saying, no, they're just retarded. This shit doesn't exist. Why? Because they've never experienced it.
But here's the thing. A panel like that is not designed for those people. It's designed for us in the field.
But when we put a man on the moon, we had how many hundreds of thousands of people that went, you just can't do it. It just isn't possible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we have. We've proven that we can put a man on the moon. We've proven that space flight is possible. Look at the International Space Station. See, that wasn't all that hard to say. Why in the hell did I have so much issue with it? But we've proven all these things. And right now we are in the paranormal field exactly where NASA was in 1960, 9 years before we actually did put a man on the moon. They thought about it. They said, we probably can. It's possible. We're going to bust our ass. But in July of 1969, we put a man on the moon, 93 million miles away. And now we look at it and go, you know, 93 million miles isn't all that far away. Look how far the Mars rover has gone. Look how far this has gone. So, I mean, we are on the cusp. And I think Scott said it beautifully when he said that there will be a group that will help guide us to this. And it may be a couple of young schmucks. It may be guys like David Roundtree mixed in with a couple of young schmucks that we don't even know about yet.
Right, right.
I mean, if you look at, well, and you mentioned it earlier, Scott, look at the EVPs that are able to be received no matter what location. From Mark and Debbie. The Constantinos
right.
do phenomenal. Now, is it their energy? Is it one or the other? You know, but they're leading the forefront of things because there's so much that revolves around them. We have David Roundtree doing things in a totally different aspect of it. You know, so do we take all these big names and we put all these big names in a room and lock them in and go, y'all figure this shit out? Or do we take some guys like me and Matt that, or, you know, even yourself, Scott, that have small teams and go, what the hell have you gotten? What can you do? How can we prove this? It's not going to be just big names. There's going to be some little schlub that comes out of the closet somewhere and goes, you know, guys, I got a thought. And he's going to floor everybody.
Well, that's it. And that's why I'm saying, I mean, I'm talking about getting people together that are from all walks. I'm talking even into the metaphysical side of things. I'm talking about bringing psychologists in and parapsychologists you know, the scientists and the, you know, everybody that matters, and any small influx or possible relation to this field needs to get together and talk.
Well, I got to say one thing. Parafest 2013, the group that you have coming together, every, as you call them, black shirt that goes out and does investigations with their little local